بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. An ordinary businessman had passed away. Someone saw that he was enjoying himself in Jannah. They asked him, such a position so easily and so elevated. He says, I was making wuzu with Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal rahmatullah alayh. That is the ustad of Imam Bukhari sahab rahmatullah alayh. So I was at the higher end of the river and Imam Ahmad was at the lower end. So I'm going to make wuzu, the water is going to flow, my used water will flow down towards him. I altered my position, I went to the lower portion and let him gain the upper position. So Allah Ta'ala told me that you have honored our man, we will honor you. Deen that flourished in the Indian subcontinent, in fact in the Muslim lands, largely it was because of respect. Muhabbat or respect. These two elements were in the making and it took them to where they took them. It carried them, directed them, it created an exit for them. But these two elements were unnegotiable, whatever they were doing, but respect for deen, respect for elders, muhabbat for the elders, that was not compromised, not negotiable. But of recent what has happened, our whole mind is towards wealth. So if someone is caught that wealth, where you can talk English with a little bit of twang and have a few scientific theories and explanations, then now the respect is shown to him. A person that can't speak that language, he doesn't have that wealth, he's not recognized, then you don't show him any importance, any respect, don't show him. So what it was, our culture was that we showed respect to our elders. Whether it was our own elders, our parents, etc. Whether it was our dini elders, but we showed them respect, showed them muhabbat, showed them love. And the showing of love, respect and muhabbat, it carried us. We came and lived in a land wherein we were not even, say, 2% at the beginning, right? But then, you see, the 2% that came in, then they sustained themselves very well. They managed themselves, they sustained themselves, and they were pillars. And if you look at the lives of those people that came in first, they were surrounded by kuffar from all sides. Living, one person is living on farm, Amzinto or somewhere, wherever they're living. And you look at all sides, there are kuffar that are living. But they sustained their deen, they sustained themselves, they managed everything. Now, what was the missing link between them and deen was respect and muhabbat. Whatever it was, they had that respect, they had that muhabbat. I don't say they were perfect, I don't say they were angels, but yes, they didn't compromise in these two regards. One of the elders of Darul Diyoband was Haji Abid Hussain Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. Not an alim, but he was one of the elders. Like how you have a shura member, so, pious person. So, one student insulted him. Pakke dunyadar. So on his face, he's an elder, he's an important person in the madrasa, even in the management, in the work. So he's doing some very important piece of work there. He's recognized, he's respected. But you know the student crowd, Besari Jamaat. They can be unruly, they can do anything. At any time they can do anything. So just he just lost it and he said, "You pakke duniyadar." Anyway, he said whatever he needed to say and he went away. So towards the evening, Haji Abid Hussain Zardun Alam, so himself he went to the student's room, looked for the room, knocked at the door, called for him, and he says to him, "See, you are the naib of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, the representative of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. To displease you is obviously displeasing Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So for Allah Ta'ala's sake, do forgive me." To quote this incident is quite easy, but to apply yourself like how they apply themselves, really it takes a lot of courage, a lot of determination. And so I say this was the missing link between them and the preservation of deen. Haji Abid Hussain Sahib Rahmatullahi, this was Haji Abid Hussain, and you get Shah Rafiuddin Sahib Rahmatullahi. Also he was the head of the madrasa. I don't think he was a formal alim, but he knew enough apne zindagi ko chalane ke liye, to run his life, he knew enough. So he was appointed as the head of the madrasa at some time. So now he just closed the office. As he left the office, one important MP came in, government official, very important. So as Mu'adh left the office, he saw this person here. So Mu'adh stood and attended to him, whatever it was, and let him go. And not even a minute passed, and a student, not a very bright or a popular student, Mu'adh Fateh Muhammad Sahib, he's still a student. So he pulled in. When he pulled in, Mu'adh opened the office, went, seated him properly, and then discussed it. So the student is telling him, "Brother, you didn't need to go through this difficulty and all that. You could have just spoken to me like how you spoke to that person." So Mu'adh says, "I can't compare you. Us dunya ke kutte ke saath, I can't compare you. You're a man of the dunya, and you are the naib of Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So I can't treat you and him with the same breath. So the ordinary person had this, the children had this, families had this, everything had, he had that respect, the muhabbat, that respect and muhabbat. So whenever it was, when it came to a crunch, then they showed that respect, they showed that muhabbat. And the muhabbat and the respect, it took them, it gave them that direction, moved them on. Whether it was a family elder, whether it was a dini elder, but it's an elder in deen, it's an elder in the family, and I need to go with him, I need to respect him. Now, this whole idea, this whole thought has vanished, it's disappeared from the scene. How did it disappear? So there was last week on Saturday, week around 11 o'clock, so there was one scientist. He came there. Muslim Hafiz, beard and all that came. So he's talking to me about this Darwin's theory. He's a doctor also, and he did all his studies and all that. So in the discussion, two things came out. One thing that came out, said, unfortunately we have to do this. You have to write the answers. You have to study the whole theory and you have to answer. And then they'll post you to the second year, medicine. So we told him, "Bhai, if you're going to be writing, then it's an act of disbelief. Writing in support of this theory, then it's an act of disbelief. So you need to get your act in order. You made a lot of scientific research, we respect you for that. But this disbelief, you wrote, they asked you some questions and you wrote it according to the information that they had supplied you, right? So it's an act of disbelief, obviously." So one person said, "But nakla kufr nabashan." It's a statement that they use. That quoting a statement of disbelief doesn't amount to disbelief. Like we quote Fir'aun, right? Faqala ana rabbukum al-a'la. Fir'aun, he made a statement of disbelief that I am your Rabb. I am Allah Ta'ala. Shaitan also said, ana khayrun min. He made a statement of disbelief that I am better than him. And in the process, he challenged the command of Allah Ta'ala that amounted to disbelief. So we quote it, we recite it. So if it could be recited, then why can't it be quoted? So I said, see, you didn't see the thing properly. See something, but see it holistically, don't see it selectively. If the statement of Fir'aun was quoted in the Quran Sharif, or the statement of belief was quoted in the Quran Sharif, then it was quoted tardidan, to reject that statement. Statement, and now we are rejecting the statement. We quoting a statement, and we opposing, rejecting it, showing that this is the flaw. See his reasoning, we cut him down to size, put him in his place. But as you writing an examination paper, are you writing it to collect marks and to collect the applaud of your examiner, or are you writing it to reject it? What is it? So his face went down, but he had to accept the truth. He said, hey, no, you have to do something about it. So if you need to take this education, then see that you are not compromising in your deen. Whatever your deen is, you need to secure it. We're not disputing you the need for taking some education. But in the process, you can't be sacrificing your deen. Anyway, the discussion continued. Then he spoke about the evolution theory. So then he says to me that he went through the whole thing, the whole study. He said this thing came about 400 years before Darwin. And when he started this thing off, there wasn't a scientist at that time that did not reject and oppose him. Everybody rejected him. There was a flaw, there was a missing link. Bring up an argument, then at some point he's missing out a point and he can't link it up to the conclusion that he arrived to. Couldn't arrive. That's why up till now they're calling it a theory. They're not calling it a fact. Then he brought about some very interesting point, two interesting factors, he said. He said, research has shown that most of the people that subscribe to this view here are those that suffer from an inferiority. So I can see now I'm some way backwards. I ought to be with a certain class, right? So I ought to fit within a circle, so I need to speak the language. If I'm not going to speak the language, then I'll be an outcast. As it is, I'm considered and counted a little bit inferior because of whatever reason, and I'm not going to speak like them, then they'll really throw me out. So in order to curry favor with them, so I need to talk that language. So that study shows that. The second thing is he brought out was even more interesting. He says, they will be able to see now why they initiated it and why they made it like a compulsory study in all universities. There must be some reason that prompted them that it must be compulsory in all, every university, this must be a compulsory study. But now, I'm doing medicine now. How does it feature in medicine? It doesn't feature anyway in medicine, but it is part of the course. I must study the thing. And I must write an examination, I must write a paper on that. So they brought it in. Why they brought it? It was brought in by some politicians. So why did they need to bring it? I asked him, why did the politicians need to bring it into the curriculum, into a university curriculum? Why did they need to bring it? He says, it's obvious. He says, you see, we wanting to bring about a certain plan, a certain order. Be it in a country, be it internationally, nationally, whichever way, but we need to bring about a certain culture, certain way, certain thought. Now, when we want to introduce a thought, then we can't introduce it, because the students are objecting, but you know, our religion goes against it. This is not what our religion teaches us. Our religion teaches us something else. So we bring it, and there's an opposition. We bring it and there's a resistance. So now we need to know an idea, we need to create a plan that will break the resistance entirely. So we came up with this plan that just delete the concept of God. When you delete the concept of God, that gives us the license to do whatever. When it gives us the license to do whatever, then we have got an advantage. Now we will maneuver that mind. See, the politician wants to maneuver the mind. He wants you to have a certain type of behavior so that he can rule over you. If you're not going to be showing that type of behavior, then how is he going to rule over you? See, initially what they did, they separated the church from the state. Again, why? They wanted to rule. They didn't want any resistance. Then it lasted for some time. Then they said, even this godly thing, this thing must be also deleted completely. Now, the same thing was mentioned by Nawab Siddiq Hasan Sahib Rahmatullahi Alayhi. He was also one of the pioneers of the Salafi movement, Ghair Mukhallid Salafi movement. But he made a similar statement, perhaps at the end of his life, but he mentioned it. He says that people that move on to Salafiyat, right, to not becoming committed to any imam, initially they find it a very great idea, of independent thought, we're thinking ourselves, finding out the reasons ourselves. But the motivating factor, the catalyst behind this, is the freedom of thought. Because you need to have the freedom of action, and the action is dictated by the thought. If your thought is like binded, then you can't be free to do what you want. You want to be free to do what you want, so, and your mind is all tied up, is bonded, so you can't be behaving totally freely. Right? So he's speaking about the same Salafiyat movement. Again, although he's one of the pioneers that started this thing off, right, in India. So he says, those people that start this off, or enter into this, but with not the right intentions. So the intention is to get the freedom. So now, instead of us just being confined to one imam, or the four imams, I call the freedom to choose what I want. I understand now, under the circumstance, perhaps it is not permissible. The nikah with this person is not permissible. Why is it not permissible? Because there was hurmat-e musaharat. Perhaps I touched the mother-in-law with lust, right? So my nikah is invalid. But now, as long as you're going to remain within the structures of taqleed, within the structures of the four imam, your nikah is invalid. One imam is allowing it, Imam Shafi'i rahmatullahi. If you're going to commit yourself to Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi alayhi, then you're going to have restrictions. But you unbinded yourself. You untied yourself from restricting yourself. Now, it's permissibility. So what the mind wants a freedom. Right? It is not the research. You haven't shifted to Imam Shafi on the basis of a sound research. It's on the basis of your nafs. Right? It's the basis of your nafs. Now you left an imam, why you left him? Was it for the sake of Allah Ta'ala? Or was it for the sake of nafs? So he didn't do it for Allah Ta'ala, he did it for nafs. So now this Nawab Siddiq Hasan, what he's saying, he says, that those people that go into this type of a Salafiyat, free thinking, unbridled, unfettered, right? So the first level is that they move away from the imams. Right? At the second level, then they feel, you know, we moved away from the imams, but now we are in a Salafiyat group. When we are in a Salafiyat group, we're still under chains. So they move out of Salafiyat as well. Right? Because they want that unfettered life, free life. Now, when they moved out from that, now they're free. They're not changed by Salafiyat, not by the imams. But then too, they see another chain around them. The chain of deen is still around them. See, they left the mazhab, they hopped onto Salafiyat. From Salafiyat, they hopped out of Salafiyat. When they hopped out of Salafiyat to Ahlul Hadith, now, at the fourth level, they're still finding them to be binded. They're still tied up. So at the last level, then they hop out of deen, na'uzubillah. See how it works. One thing to the other, second to the third to the fourth. So this holding on to an imam actually is the preservation of your deen. You don't want to hold on, then there's no parameters. When there's no parameters, you're jumping from one to the other, second to the third to the fourth, and then you're totally out. Now, for any system to run well, you need to have some parameters and some guidelines. You got your son living with you, right? in your house. You want him to behave within certain parameters. If he's not living within the parameters, you will guide him, you will tutor him, you will direct him. But he's still insistent, then you'll be a little bit stern with him. Then you'll cut off some of his freedom, some of his benefits, you'll cut it off. But if he's still carrying on, then you ask him at the last point, now make up your mind, you want to stay here or not. Now imagine, he's coming into your house with a free woman. He wants to use your home, but for all his activity, indecent activities, you tell him, alright, the first time I've overlooked it, but I can't allow this to continue. This type of indecent behavior, activity within my house, I can't allow it. Aren't you going to do that? If he begins to employ his reasoning, free reasoning, and he says, alright, you know, a sink is to wash out all the dirt and the filth. So let me make pisaf inside the sink, kitchen sink. So for one, two times you may just tolerate this. But the third time, say, make up your mind. You want to stay here, you want to live here within parameters. But you want unfettered license. You don't want anybody to come and restrict you, say, look for some other place. For that matter, every country, any system, they want you to work in an order. You drive on the right. This is a freeway, it's a one way, you will drive in that direction. Now, someone says, no, what's the need of me putting myself under this type of restrictions? I can drive as I want. They'll pull you off the road, won't they? They'll pull your license away, they'll pull you off the road. So you need to commit yourself to a certain system for the system to run well. So the same applies to the imam, that you're going to restrict yourself to one imam, it's going to give you a direction. But you freed yourself from the system, one person had a da'wat. He's got one buzruk as a friend, and he's got a grand da'wat. In the grand da'wat, he invites all the government officials, everybody. Whoever he knew of, and whoever he had some contacts, and some understanding, so he called all of them. So everybody came to the da'wat, but he didn't invite that buzruk. That was his very close friend, he didn't invite him. So the buzruk expressed his feelings, you know, you could call the whole world, but conveniently you left me out. So this person says to that buzruk, see, mere kutiya ki yahan bachcha paida hua. My female dog, to use the word is not too respectable in the masjid, my female dog has got some pups, you know. Jab unkiya kutiya ke haan bachya aaye, pille aaye, to sab dunya ke kutte ko mene bila diya. So all the dunya dars, the dunya ke kutte ko, I call all of them. All the dogs of the dunya, I call them. Government, this position, that position, all those people that are running after the world, temptations, etc. So I call them all in. Inshallah, jab mere yahan bachcha paida hoga, inko nahi bulaunga, aapko bulaunga. When I have my own child, I don't want to invite these people, I invite you. See the respect that they had initially, and the respect that the Muhammad carried people. It secured their deen, it secured them, gave them a direction. And people, then what happened, they moved on to another culture. The culture came in from the education, advanced education. The advanced education gave that education a chance, an opportunity to mold the mind. Molded your mind. Now, when your mind is molded, so before it was an in thing to be of some khidmat to your father, to your elder, to your mother, to your grand, it was an in thing. You won't talk about it. Now a person makes khidmat for his mother, you know, I'm taking my mother for Hajj, for Umrah, I'm taking, I'm doing my own money, you know, I'm doing this. But it's not a thing to talk about. Do you talk about it when you say that I'm taking my wife? You talk about it. You don't make it a big deal. Your child, you talk about it. What's the need to talk about it when you're taking your parents? That means you didn't afford them that respect. That respect has lost, as though it's like a very big sacrifice, you know. Very great sacrifice you're doing. You're taking your parents along for Hajj, whatever, you're taking them along. Such a big sacrifice you're making. So you have to make a discussion of it. But when you took your child, you made a discussion of it. Took your wife, You couldn't even make the decisions without your wife. Forget not taking her. You couldn't even make a decision. She was so important to you. She just came in now, and suddenly she took the position of a father, mother, head of the family, everybody, she's the head. Now that is exactly what the hadith is talking about, the advent of Qiyamah. Someone said it nicely. You know, sometimes you think now, the hadith, how does it fit on? So with this technology, how many things have fitted on? How many things have fitted on? One thing that the hadith is talking about, that the close people, your parents, you will distance. And the distant people, you will make close. So isn't the technology doing this, helping you to do it? Your parents were supposed to be the closest to you. So they are distanced. Your friend, etc., they were supposed to be kept at a distance. They have become close. You sitting in a room, mother is there, wife is there, everybody else is there. They are kept at a distance. And the person who was supposed to be at a distance, he is in your life. See what the hadith is saying. That the one that is supposed to be kept at a distance, he is made close. The one that is supposed to be kept close, he is made at a distance. How perfect. Hadith is how perfect. Maybe some words. Short words. That is what is known as Jawami or Kalim. Comprehensive words. Little words, but you know, volumes of meaning. Volumes and volumes, tons and tons of meaning. So your father, mother, everybody can be suffering, etc. Everybody can. It doesn't affect you. You don't even feel any pain, any hurt, nothing. You become desensitized. See this culture, how deep it is sunk into you, that you begin to believe in the culture. Outwardly the man has got a kurta, everything else, but that culture has gone so sunk so deep into you, that you think what you're doing is right. So we're talking about this respect and muhabbat, right? And how we got preserved as a nation because of this muhabbat, because of this respect, and which was the point where this muhabbat and the respect was deleted from our lives. Haji Bhai Padia Sahib Rahmatullahi, around 91, 92 or somewhere, there was an article in the Newsweek, right? And the person that's writing the article is expressing his concerns, you know, about Islam, about the progress of Islam. And as he's discussing the progress of Islam, then he's saying that there are three things that are on the way of the West, you know. The three things that we need to just clamp down upon to prevent the progress of Islam. Islam is coming at a tremendous speed. Nobody can stop the thing. So now, if you want to delay the process, we need to do three things. We'll do these three things, we'll delay the process. Either we'll delay the process, or we'll complicate the whole process. The whole thing will be complicated. It's going, it's moving, but we need to complicate or jam the process. Now, how do we jam the process? Now, that was about 91, if I remember correctly, this is where it started. Some years ago, about 26 years, spoke about it then. And I remember he made copies of that thing, he sent it everywhere. If I'm lucky, I think it's somewhere preserved in our library, right? It's preserved somewhere. So the one thing that he mentioned there is bring about gender equality. Right? So in the gender equality, pull the woman out from the respect of her home into the streets. She must become a doctor. She must become a clerk. She must become a saleswoman. She must become a manager. She must become a dentist. She must be thrown, pulled out of her house, and that office of hers must be looking like a place of respect. I remember when I was in school, right? Grade 1, grade 2, early 60s, right? I remember that for a woman to be out of the house, right? It was not a reputable thing. Not a respectable thing. Even a woman teacher was not a thing of respect. Now for the woman to be remaining in the house is a thing of disrespect. Dishonor, she's very backwards, she doesn't know anything. She is laid back. Right? At that time it was that the woman that is in the home, she's a respectable woman, she's the queen of the house. Now the culture has gone so deep deeply sunken into you because of this corrupt education, that now that wrong seems to be right. Now it, in her home she looks to be a very, very, very backward woman. She doesn't know. She's far behind the times, right? But when she's in the office, she's in the university, she's a professor, she's some doctor, now she's a respectable thing. But see, the whole value system has been capsized. What was wrong is right. What was right is wrong. The whole value system has been capsized. But how they worked? See, these people that work like this, they don't work in a day. That system of that works, they work 100 years in advance. Okay, we need to get people to think like this, but it's going to be a long plan before people get to accept what we want them to accept. But when they accept this, then they will be really drunken. When they'll be so drunken, they can't see the right from wrong. They can't see it. It's so complicated. Their minds are so drunken, so intoxicated, they can't see it. So now, when the woman has been pulled out from the home, into this, right, and through a very, very systematic system, through education, a very systematic system, they pulled out here, and they brought her here now, right? Now, everybody will be working towards bringing her there. And unfortunately, Muslims also will talk, what if? What if something happens? That's what they're saying. What if something happens? Now, I ask you a simple question. What if it doesn't happen? You brought that education to the girl, but what if it doesn't happen? You thought that it will be a solution, but it wasn't a solution for most women. Number two, is history showing that those women that stayed at home, there was no what if for them. It worked out. Wherever they were, it worked out for them. But the moment they went to the streets, then they became street women. They were not home women. They were not the queens of the house. They were the queens of the street. It's a disrepute. It's a disrespect. But no, we still see our respect in that. Then, when we see a bust up like the Ansar, they don't say, see Ansar. But I ask you, is it fair to lump the whole blame onto the Ansar? No, it's not a fair thing. The public also has to assume responsibility. They are just the marketeer, they are just the businessman. He's got a Muslim name, Muslim ethos, right? But they're in for money, they're in for business. But when they are in for business, then what are they looking out for? What the clientele wants. They want to see what you want. And they will design it according to how you want. So you don't lump the entire blame onto them. You also assume some part of the responsibility. I'm also to blame, you're also to be blamed. We are all thieves in, bunched together. See where it stems from and where it takes you there. This is the first thing that happens. The whole culture goes off. You can't think right any longer. That wrong is seen to be right, the right is seen to be wrong. But it doesn't stop there. When that individual has been taught, has been trained to think fairly, freely, going out, right? Now they're thinking freely. When they're thinking freely, so whatever profession you are in, say you are in medicine, right? So doctors will be called together and they will have a circle discussion. Circle discussion. One doctor, male, female, etc. Now, instead of a discussion, this person is getting interested in her. Doesn't it happen? I ask you, doesn't it happen? As an accountant, you're getting more interested in the person than the subject. It's going to happen, it's bound to happen. In the meanwhile, the person is married. When he's married, his loyalty to his wife is gone, or the loyalty of the wife to the husband is gone, she becomes more loyal to that person than being loyal to the husband. See what happens? How the whole social structure is broken down. That's the idea of this shaitans. The whole idea is to break down the social structure. When the social structure is broken down, then they can maneuver you. They can manipulate you. But now we like a proud thing, we'll go and subscribe to this evolution theory. So you see how I know it. Oh, my fingertips, I know it. But you're not understanding that someone is taken through education. Shaitan is taking someone through the auspices of education. Remember we in Dioban, so we had one ustad there. He wasn't our teacher, but a very respectable person. You should call him Bai Saeed, used to call him. He used to be the grandson of was Maula Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullahi. So just to take his duas, Nasir used to go to him. So we were there once, so we asked him by saying, was Nasir Farma. He was old, he's seen the good times of Maula Gangohi Rahmatullahi, all big buzus he's seen. And a very soft going, easy person. So you could tell him whatever you want to tell him. Very easy going person. And another Shaykh also, when he used to come from Medina, Munawara, he'll make a point to visit this Pai Sayyid. Bring some gifts for him, make a point to visit him. But now once in Ramadan, I'll come to this story again. Once in Ramadan, this Pai Sayyid used to be hunting also. Deers and all used to hunt. And in the month of Ramadan, he hunted two deers and he brought it to Hazrat Shaykh Rahmatullah Ali. And Shaykh liked him very much, respected him also. But as the Shaykh of the way, ever it was supposed to be said, he would say it. This is by Sayyid Tajub hai. Ye mah ibadat ka hai ya shikari ka hai? By Sayyid, now is this a month of playing game and all that? Or it's a month of ibadat? So he says, I said, a very simple person, very down to earth, simple person. So I said, main zikr karne ke liye baithta hu. I sit down to make zikr. Zikr, namaz, Quran Sharif. Lekin phir neer aa jati hai. When I sit one place to make zikr, then the sleep overtakes me. So what I do, in one hand I got my tasbih, one hand I got my gad, I do the both things. Simple people, but what meticulous people, what great people there, what great people. So he told us one day, he says, Shaitan doesn't approach everybody in one style. He's got a different method. He's an educated person, I must mislead him through education. This is a stupid person, I must mislead him through his stupidity. So he will come in different disguises, different pretexts to mislead, not one single approach. So our understanding and our standard is the Quran Sharif. We can't move away from this. The moment you move away, no matter what brains you use, what intelligence you use, you're gone. So we're talking about this freedom of thought and what it does to a person. How it confuses, complicates, your total loss. Allah Pak speaks about not the intelligent persons now only, in those that zamana. Qarun, Fir'aun, Haman. Waqanu mustabsirin. They're all the intelligent people. They were not like that. See, Fir'aun and all that, they put the pyramids on, right? Up till this day, the engineers, their minds are all, they lost. How come they managed to do this so perfectly, mathematically? They're so advanced, they're more advanced than us. How they managed to do it? So they were a stupid piece of person. But with all that intelligence, they were and worshipped a stupid thing like Fir'aun. See, when they drifted away from Allah Ta'ala, then your whole understanding, everything was corroded. The wrong would seem to be right, the right would seem to be wrong. And there is no barriers for you. See, they wanted to break all the barriers. And then when they broke all the barriers, so now they are disgraced, right? They are humiliated. Look in Ireland, the Prime Minister is a gay, coming into Parliament with his gay partner. And he says, I am the she. He says, I am the she. What I say, disgrace upon disgrace, humiliation upon humiliation. But when you opted to move out from the divine system, right, then there's no barriers for you. But there's no barriers, and it's just disgrace. Humiliation upon humiliation, disgrace upon disgrace. And then our public also says, well, it's a freedom of choice, let them do it. Why must we speak? Why must we be judgmental? Like, tomorrow you kill your son, why must you be judgmental? He's killing the law of Allah Ta'ala, you can't be judgmental. But if he kills your son, then aren't you going to be judgmental? Allah Ta'ala give us that understanding, the right understanding. This morning I was doing Surah Mulk. Alladhi khalaqa al-mauta wal-hayat. He was created death and life. He was created death and life. That means death is also a creation of Allah Ta'ala, as life is a creation of Allah Ta'ala. Mistakenly, we think that death means non-existence. That's how we think. But this verse shows that death is a commodity, right? It's a material thing. Like life is material. This is material, this is material. Because the creation of Allah Ta'ala, الَّذِي خَلَقَ الْمَوْتَ وَالْحَيَاةِ. So both got an existence. The existence of this is different, and the existence of this is different. Two, I have got the existence, but two, both existence are totally different. Now how do you understand difference of existence? See, the child that is in the womb, his existence is totally different. For the person that is out of the womb, his existence is totally different. See, he's living on a different plane, and he's living in a different plane. Right? So both are existing, but just the existence is totally different, worlds apart. Right? So death is a different type of existence, and life is a different existence. Right? So what is death then? What is death? See, science, with all their progress, they can't explain up to this day what is life and what is death. Because they don't believe in Allah Ta'ala. So they must get complicated. They must get confused. So now we're coming there. Like we came to the jet age, we send the rocket to the moon, we'll come there. By what is 7,000, 8,000 years in the world, you couldn't make out these basic things. 8,000 years from Adam alayhi salam till now is about 8,000 years, right? So you couldn't make out this basic thing, you still say you're going to make it out. By humble yourself, accept Allah Ta'ala, you'll understand the meaning of life, you'll understand the meaning of death. Jisko Allah ki yaad a gayi, to usko marna a gaya, usko jina a gaya. The one that's got Allah Ta'ala in his life, he knows how to die, he knows how to live. But he doesn't have Allah Ta'ala in his life, then what stops him from behaving like how he's behaving? Like a baboon or a monkey, however he wants to behave, what stops him? Is there anything to stop him? So, what is the meaning of death? Death is a separation of the soul from the body. It's a separation. It's not non-existence. The soul is still existing, but just that it's separated from the body. Yes, the body will now disintegrate. But can you say that the person is gone into non-existence, into oblivion? No. He's not gone to oblivion. He's existing. Yes, the body, after a period of time, it will disintegrate, decompose, it will come earth. But he is not ended. He is continuing with his journey. خَلَقَ الْمَوْتَ وَالْحَيَاةَ. Then you got, according to the Quran Sharif, different levels of life. Different levels of life, right? One level of life is like the person is as good as dead. أَفَمَنْ كَانَ مَيْتًا فَأَحْيَيْنَاهُ وَكُنْتُمْ أَمْوَاتًا فَأَحْيَاكُمْ. See this verse. أَوْ مَنْ كَانَ مَيْتًا فَأَحْيَيْنَاهُ وَجَعَلْنَا لَهُ نُورًا يَمْشِي بِهِ فِي النَّاسِ. He was dead, then we gave him life. So this is one type of life that the Quran Sharif is talking about. Man was dead, and then we gave him life. What is meant? Now, to understand this, a small illustration is required. He was dead, now we gave him life. Right. Imagine a person has got an orchard, right? He's doing some fruit farming, right? Or an orchard. Now that tree is alive, but it's not producing any fruit. No, hardly any leaves, hardly any branches, but it's alive. But it's not producing anything. It's looking very good because it's being nourished with the right type of nourishment, right type of climatic conditions. So it looks very nice, very beautiful. But it's not producing. So the farmer, what does he say? Why, this is on the road. This is as good as dead. Move it away. Why, there is no production? I'm doing this not for the looks. I'm doing it for business. And I'm doing it for business. This has got no value. In my sense, it's got no value. So they move it out of the way. I was talking to the students, you know. I said, by your looks doesn't mean anything. So the boy comes about 19, 18. He wants to comb his hair a little bit more, trim the side, moustache, looks, have a golden frame, have a golden tenure. So they want the looks and all that, right? But I have to remind them, boy, this thing doesn't mean much. You go for an interview, job interview, nobody will look, hey, how beautiful he looks, right? Does he look at you? what type of kurta you're wearing, what type of looks you've got. No, I'm not interested in that. Are you competent enough to do this job? Are you honest enough? And are you capable of delivering? It's the two things I want to see. Capable of doing the work, and you're honest. Right? These are the two things I want to see. If you are passing this, I'll take you on. But you're not competent to do the job, or you're not honest, then I will remove you. Now, that came out of the equation, and it's replaced with the looks. So the tree is for the look. What I say, by pull it out, or I need to put something else in its place. My business is going. It's taking so much of space, this thing. So now look at that kafir. He's extracted himself deliberately out of the service of Allah Ta'ala. Right? The tree was serving you, right? So as long as it was serving you, so that thing meant something for you. You know, it was taken seriously, it meant something. Providing. Providing a service. If it's providing a service, then it had some value. So that kafir, right, or that disobedient person, he's not providing a service for Allah Ta'ala. For the reason that he was created, illa liya'budun, he was there to provide a service to Allah Ta'ala, to serve Allah Ta'ala. But he's not serving Allah Ta'ala, whether it is through ibadat or whichever way, but his whole idea was to serve Allah Ta'ala. And not serving Allah Ta'ala, then what is he? Is he alive or dead? He's like the tree. I'm not interested in the looks. So you give him all the good type of nourishment, everything, all. He's gymming, and he's eating the right type of food, everything, right? Looking very nice, right? Fair, however he's looking. But I ask you, is there any value to the person? Koi qeemat is aadmika. Is there any value to the person? No, absolutely, he's not serving Allah Ta'ala. So there's no value to him. Awa man kana maitan fahyi nahu. So this is one type of death. That you are not producing, you are serving the purpose that you've been born for. Fahyi nahu. It's one type of death. One type of death, one type of life. الَّذِي خَلَقَ الْمَوْتَ وَالْحَيَاةِ. Again, look, you look at this verse. Allah Ta'ala starts off with خَلَقَ الْمَوْتَ وَالْحَيَاةِ. He starts off with death, moving on to life. Right? And normally you would think you start off with life, then you go on to death. But Allah Ta'ala starts off with death, then moves on to life. The surah تَبَارَكَ الَّذِي بِيَدِ الْمُلْكِ. There be some light that every ummati should have this in his heart, preserved. Every ummati. You know the prices. I remember my father in the wholesale. I think you ask him anything, a money biscuit, one box. He'll just give you the cost price and the wholesale price. The cost price will give him Gujarati or something, whatever. And the other price will give it to you. But he'll do everything. So if you're doing something repeatedly, you'll get it off. And you're reading Tabarakallahi every day, every night you're reading. Right? So, it can't be that you're reading it every day and you don't know it. You'll know it. You'll get it every day if you're reciting it. But our problem is now, we'll recite the Surah Yasin, or in the Surah, Surah Waqiyah, why? That you don't suffer poverty. Why there's a content, there's a message of Allah Ta'ala, that message has been lost. You forgot the message only after the money. What we have made ourselves, we have transformed ourselves, to respectable stomachs. Isn't it? While taking a degree, other job is not so respectable, not so dignified, it's more dignified. So what? What's the summary of life? A respectable stomach. You say, the standard of living. But the standard of living is what? Pet. So you become a petty or a petu or a peta, what else? The whole life, the whole summary of life becomes a stomach, nothing else. So you're working to eat. Eating to live. So Allah Ta'ala starts the verse, Alladhi khalaqa al-maut. Then he goes on to wal-hayat. But why did he start off with maut? Because I thought about this thing here, and it made me think about a ball game, a football game, right? Football game has got a meaning if there is a goal post. Right? Say there is no goal post at all, and people are playing. What do you say? Hey, you're going in circles, but you're wasting time. Anywhere in the world, hey, the best player is playing, but there is no goal post. Would you want to see it live? Or, I don't know what's the other word for. You see it live or you see it dead? However you see it, but would you want to see the game? If there is no goalpost, will you want to see it? He's wasting our time. What are you doing? What is he working towards? But if he's got a goalpost, you know he's got a direction. So life has got a meaning if it's got an end. Right? The end of life is called death. And I say it's not non-existence, it's a different type of existence. Right? But because it's not visible to our physical eyes, therefore we say non-existence. Because that life is not visible to our physical eyes. So, without that goalpost, the football means nothing. So without death, this life doesn't mean anything. Yes. Now with death, now you know it's a direction. I'm going towards this, my life, I'm going to end up, this is what's going to happen. You've got a direction in life. When you've got that direction, now you're working straight. But if you don't have the death in your memory or before you, then there's no direction in life. What are you working for? What are you striving for? You're coming to Masjid for what? So the strive and the struggle is for a purpose, and that purpose is called death. At that point, you know, that's the winning point. The death is the winning point. So therefore Allah Ta'ala starts off, Alladhi khalaqa al-mawta wal-hayat. So that is why the hadith says, that who is that intelligent person, the wise person, is the one that leaves out haram. One that he saw the whole life, right? After he saw and examined life, then he must come to some conclusions. After you examine life, after you 35, 40, then you saw the ups of life, the downs of life, deaths, births, accidents, prosperity, adversity, luck, and failure, all the things you saw, everything you saw, right? When you saw this whole thing, it must bring you to some type of conclusion, some type of understanding, because you saw everything of life. You went through everything of life, now it's just a replay of life. You saw what was childhood, right? You saw what was adulthood, you saw what is to be a father, then in a few days you became a grandfather, right? So what has happened? It's a replay of the whole life. So there's a replay of the whole life. What Allah wants you, just to replay, for you to become a father, then a grandfather, then a great-grandfather, then a great-great-grandfather. Is that the plan? For you to see, you know, understand, look into life. It's coming to an end, but what type of end do you want for yourself? So as long as you've got death in the equation, you're moving in the right direction. I chose to speak about this, why? Because we are approaching the Mubarak month of Ramadan. From Rajab to Shabriya Dua, Allah Barik Lana Fi Rajab wa Shaban wa Ballighna Ramadan. Don't you make the Dua. So from now, it's already Jamadil Awal, right? Till Ramadan is just 4 months. Tabligh Jamaat also says, go out for 4 months. To get you prepared, there is some time. At least 3 chillas you have to give. In 40 days, there's a transformation. So for you to gain the maximum in the month of Ramadan, you need to prepare from now. Now Ramadan comes and you're not prepared really, then you have wasted the month of Ramadan. I don't say it's a total write-off, but you have lost such a beautiful opportunity. But if you put yourself into preparation mode from now, come the month of Ramadan, you're flying, you're moving very well. You planned yourself, you programmed yourself, you did everything that was required. So when Ramadan came, now you are moving very well. It's a pleasure, it's a delight. You're just waiting for it to come. So in the preparation plan, what are you supposed to be doing? Right? So in the preparation plan, you have to do about 3 or 4 things. One is to acknowledge the favors of Allah Ta'ala. Right? For the whole year, what favors of Allah Ta'ala did you enjoy? How much of favors you enjoyed? Allah Pak says about insan, إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ لِرَبِّي لَكَنُودُ. Mankind is very ungrateful to Allah Ta'ala. The gloomy days we talk about, the doomy days we talk about, gloomy days, that are very bad year, we'll keep repeating that broken record, repeating that song. Gloomy year, business not right, failed year, we failed there. We'll keep repeating that. But the bloom, you don't talk about it. Oh, sugar is alright, it's alright. Let's talk about sugar. But the gloom, you keep talking about the gloom. Can't forget that thing. Keep repeating it, like a broken record. Is that right? the right thing is talk about the favors of Allah Ta'ala, what you enjoyed. See, the Islamic way is not to compare your wealth with his wealth. Yes, compare your wealth with the one that is lower than you, so you will understand how much of favors of Allah Ta'ala you enjoy. Compare your health with the person that is in hospital, you will understand how much of favor of Allah Ta'ala you enjoy. Compare yourself against the person that is on a dialysis. Compare yourself against a person who's got cancer. Compare yourself against a person who's got an acute problem, right? You will understand the favor of Allah Ta'ala. Allah Ta'ala, I could have been in a worse position. It is, Allah Ta'ala, just your grace, just your favor. I could have been worse than him. So if you look at your health, you're much better than millions of people. Look at the quality of food you're eating, much better than millions and billions of people, right? Aren't you eating and enjoying? Did you go one day home, empty stomach, one whole day, 24 hours? So there wasn't one day that Allah Ta'ala deprived you of his favors. But that, do you talk about it? One buzrug was the latter part of his life, he had a prostate problem. Couldn't pass urine so well. So someone came to visit him. So, Mizaj Sharif, you know, so how are you feeling? So he said, everything is carrying on right. But I am feeling so upset of myself. For 70 years of my life, I enjoyed such a beautiful passage for all the ways to go out so much of ease and comfort. But I could not recognize and appreciate this favor of Allah Ta'ala, that this dirt, that filth was flowing out with so much of ease. This stupid, dirty tongue of mine could not thank Allah Ta'ala. So then he says, but you know, when you are ungrateful, then you must go through this difficulty. It's because of my ungratitude. So for all the years that we enjoy, we can't make a song of that. Yes, that gloom and doom, we have to talk about it. We have to talk about it. So this is the meaning of innal insana li rabbi lakanood. You talk about the distressful days, you talk about the hardship, but the bloom, the happiness, the goodness that you had, the enjoyment, the favors of Allah Ta'ala that you enjoyed, that you can't talk. So you look at your health, you are better off than many other people. Look at the type of food, better off than many other people. Look at the wealth, compare yourself now, the wealth that you've got now, to the wealth that you had, say, 45 years ago. Same, much more. Huh? The same wealth you got now, that you had 45, 50 years ago, or something totally different. Anybody will tell you, much more. But yeah, you enjoy so much, then what's the need for you to complain? Or one wealthy person came here, what a big dua, maybe, difficulties, problems, you know. Then by what? Allah remove you from all the difficulty. So I got a little bit distressed with him now. Man is in a sakrat now. So I became over-distressed because of his constraints and distress. So Allah, don't get so distressed. It's not such a major problem now. He says, you know, I projected 20 million, I made 15. So it's against my projection. But I says, what's the need to cry? There are many people who don't even get half a million the entire year. You made 15 and you should cry. But I got angry with the person. Before I was sort of crying with him. But now I got angry with him, but you got so much. It's just that he didn't meet your projections. You're crying to Allah Ta'ala. Is that the way that you show thanks? And many a times, Allah Ta'ala doesn't give you that amount that you projected for, and that's a blessing for you. See, that the child or that person that's got sugar, he's craving for that food. But his people, they will pull those things away from him. That chocolate, that candy, everything will pull away. Can you say that the elders don't like him? They like him, but they know, he doesn't know his limits. And when he doesn't know his limits, he'll fall into something that is very dangerous. So they'll pull that favors away from him. Not because they dislike him, but because he doesn't know limits. Because he doesn't know limits, we're pulling it away from him. So sometimes that happens in the system, that we don't know our limits. And when we don't know our limits, Allah pulls away something away from us. Right? So we come back to our equilibrium, you know, we get our balance right. And without that, the balance is gone off. So he pulls it away just to put you back to realign. So one is to count the favors of Allah Ta'ala, speak about it to yourself or within your family, not in pride, not boastfully, but within your family, within your children, So that they don't begin to complain. He got this, we don't have this. He's got this type of car, we don't have that type of car. Our deeni way is to be thankful to Allah Ta'ala and to be content with whatever we have got. Not only to be thankful, but to feel that what we have got is much more than what we deserve. We don't deserve this. Allah Ta'ala bless us with Umrah. Allah Ta'ala, I didn't deserve this. Now, go and complain. Hey, only one tafaf, they allow you, they will not allow you. But nothing else you got to talk about. Talk about this, that you were not supposed to be there. Allah Ta'ala took you to that place. Aren't you talking about the favor that you enjoyed? If you had to talk about something, some complaint about someone. This official, that person. When will we think in reverse, the other way around? So think about the favors of Allah Ta'ala. And I'll guarantee you, any person thinks about his favors and his content. In other words, when you say content, then he thinks within his heart that I've got much more than what I deserve. I'll tell you, I'll guarantee you that he'll be a happy person. In every respect, he'll be a happy person. But you must think of the favor of Allah Ta'ala. Talk about it. Amma bi ni'mati rabbika fahadis. Talk about it. Within your family, within your children, so that they appreciate what they've got. Otherwise, they'll always be crybabies. Admit it. Acknowledge the favors that we are going through. This is the first thing that we do. The second thing that we do, right, as we are approaching the month of Ramadan, is some dry cleaning process. One is you recognizing the favors of Allah Ta'ala, thanking Allah Ta'ala, right? And the second thing with that, then you are asking Allah Ta'ala's forgiveness. Allah Ta'ala, your favor and I misused. Eyes must look at the Quran Sharif, look at the Kaaba Sharif, look at my parents with respect. For every look at a look, my parents, I'll get credited with one Hajj Sawab. But Allah Ta'ala, I was supposed to be looking at the right things. Look at the Quran Sharif, I would have got Sawab. Look at my parents, I would have got Sawab. Looking at the Kaaba Sharif, I would have got Sawab. But instead of looking at the right things, I'm looking at the wrong things. So Allah Ta'ala, do forgive me for the misuse of the eyes. What I'm not supposed to be looking at, I'm looking at that. I'm looking at ghibat now, the message, WhatsApp message. This person did this one here. This person that did that. Now the irony of the whole thing is I'm reading the ghibat, I'm reading the slander, right? And I don't consider the wrong to be wrong. I ask you, is not that a sin? Is that not a sin that you are listening to this, that wrong, listening to that ghibat, but you don't consider the wrong to be a wrong? Is that a guna or not? So, now you look within yourself. Now, before Ramadan, you've got 4 months, what wrongs I'm doing? Allah Ta'ala, wash me out of the wrongs. Clean me out. At least you begin to acknowledge what's the wrong I'm doing. I'm reading the wrong. I'm beginning to believe the wrong. There was a slander about someone. I read the thing and I began to believe. I began to have doubt of the person's integrity. The wrong that is committed with my eyes. Then the wrong that is committed with my ears. I heard some things, right? You know, some girl talking over the phone, over the radio. And I'm taking some lust, I'm taking some feeling that nobody knows besides Allah Ta'ala. Allah Ta'ala knows. يَعْلَمُ خَائِنَةَ الْآيُنِ وَمَا تُخْفِي الصُّدُورِ. What you're concealing, Allah Ta'ala knows. He knows about it. You want to delay the conversation. Why? You're listening to that girl and you're feeling very, very, very enjoyed. You're feeling a feeling of enjoyment. So who knows about this, that you are talking, you are lengthening the conversation because you are enjoying it? I asked one Qari Sahib, some many years ago, 30, 35 years ago, I asked him. So he used to listen to all his Qaris, sometimes Qari and sometimes Qari'ah. Indonesian, Malaysian Qari'ahs. So I asked him, you're listening to these Qari'ahs, but I'm asking in confidence, just me and you, that when you listen to these Qari'ahs, right, woman Qaris, right, what happens to you when you're listening to them? Because you're listening to them and you got a video and listening to them. So Mawlana says, you know, if I was my person around near me when I'm listening to a recitation, I was tempted to go to the screen and kiss that girl on her lips. So I asked you, you are doing this for the sake of Allah Ta'ala or for the sound on that voice of that person? What are you doing? In the name of Islam, what are you doing? Imagine if someone did some wrong in your name. He took your name and he did wrong. How would you like it? He stole or he committed zina. He said, no, this person told me to do it. He came under your name and did the wrong. Now we're doing the wrong in the name of Allah Ta'ala.
how much worse it becomes. In the name of Allah Ta'ala, but we're doing a wrong. So the wrong that is committed with the eyes, then the wrong that is committed with the ears, with the tongue, three would be recognized. The fourth one we don't even recognize. The wrong that we do with the heart. We are malice, pride, ostentation, show, right? All these things here. Comes up and come up repeatedly it comes up. But do we consider the wrong as wrong? And the fifth thing, we don't even consider it wrong. The time that we misuse, useless discussions, meeting, socializing, no purpose, aimlessly, just wasting time. So these five areas we need to correct, make istighfar for the wrong that we have done. Sincerely, Allah give us a tawfiq, that we use our time right, our eyes right, our tongues right, our ears right, our hearts right. So the one is you made shukr and thanked Allah Ta'ala, then you made istighfar, right? Second thing. Then the third effort that we need to make, from now, we make a concerted effort for the children in our home to learn the Quran Sharif well. Because with a lot of enthusiasm we made them hafiz, right? Every father, every ustad, with a lot of enthusiasm, he made his child hafiz. Now that he must fare well at the Taraweeh in Ramadan, he needs to be prepared well for him to be able to stand the musalla properly, correctly. Now the musallis will feel their pleasure to stand behind the hafiz. Hey, smooth movement. See how beautiful the child is reading. Because he prepared himself wrong in advance. Now if the child is not prepared well, people say, hey, what's wrong with this person, man? What's wrong with this person here? They get disorientated because of his recitation. Why his recitation is gone? Because his parents didn't worry, his ustad, etc. didn't worry, preparing him pre-Ramadan. So if they prepared him pre-Ramadan, when Ramadan steps in, child is very well prepared. The father is worried, mother is worried. 5-6 months in advance, they're getting him right. Now when Ramadan came, so the child is prepared. So there's three efforts we need to do in preparation for Ramadan. Three things are coming to my mind. Maybe there are other things as well, but these three things are very prominent. And the third thing is because, you see, it's a craze everywhere. I mean, my child hafiz, I have one jalsa, end of it. Hafiz, jalsa, the end of it. But the more important thing is, how do you sustain this thing here? How do you continue with this? That's even more important. Allah Ta'ala.